This is Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. You can now subscribe for direct access to all our shows online at youtube.com/Uprising with Sonali. Your subscription sustains the TV production of Uprising. Disney's upcoming live-action feature film Cinderella by Kenneth Branagh is supposed to be a feminist retelling of an old fairy tale where the main character has agency and intelligence. But sadly, it is visually very much in line with unrealistic notions of feminine beauty that we see in the animated Disney films. Actress Lily James's waistline as Cinderella appears so tiny that many accuse the filmmakers of photoshopping inches away. But the actress revealed that it was indeed her waistline, stuffed into a corset so tight that she was forced to be on a liquid diet throughout filming. Little girls in contemporary American society are so immersed in so-called princess culture that today it's commonplace to see them dressed for school in princess costumes, wearing glittery and impractical shoes, worrying about their appearance, and refusing to own a single piece of clothing that isn't either pink or purple. What is princess culture doing to our daughters, and how can parents who are sickened by its effects fight back against the highly lucrative industry that promotes this deeply seductive culture? Today, as part of our ongoing series on the politics of parenting, we address the dangers of princess culture with Rebecca Haynes. She is the author of The Princess Problem, Guiding Our Girls Through the Princess-Obsessed Years. Welcome to Uprising, Rebecca.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Sonali.
Well, it seems as though we have kind of always had princess culture, haven't we, given that Disney cartoons featuring the passive, stereotypical female characters that have somewhat maybe evolved in recent years, they've been around for decades. Or is it just so widespread now that it just seems that there have always been girls obsessed with wanting to be princesses?
You know, it's really actually a marketing phenomenon that Disney tapped into about 15 years ago. They realized they had all of these princess properties that were individually very popular, and that when they re-released the movies into theaters or onto DVD or video, people would watch it and buy a whole new surge of products for that princess. But they realized about 15 years ago that if they brought all the princesses together into one unified line called Disney Princess, that the line would be worth more than the sum of its parts. And indeed it was. It's become one of the most successful licensed brands globally.
And so tell our listeners about how you got involved in investigating this notion that princess culture is widespread and that it might be harmful. I understand that for your book, The Princess Problem, you did very, let's just say, real research, first-person research. You actually dressed up as a princess and went to birthday parties.
I did. I'm a professor at Salem State University in Salem, Massachusetts. And my research area is girls' media culture. But I'm also, on the side, I am a singer and I enjoy performing. And one day I was backstage at a rehearsal for a performance and one of my friends said to me, you know, I've been making great money on the side as a birthday party princess. And the more I had her talk to me about it, the more fascinated I was, because when I had done the research for my previous book, Growing Up with Girl Power, in the early 2000s, little girls would talk to me about girl power, but princesses kept coming up. And I thought, you know, this is important. This is significant. So with the help of my friend, I networked and I got a job on the side as a birthday party princess. And so every weekend, I was sent out as a princess to little girls' birthday parties. And so I was able to really, in a very first-hand way, see what the momentous occasions that girls enjoy celebrating princess culture were like in their lives, you know, for the good stuff and the maybe not so good stuff.
So let's talk about how prevalent it is today. I don't have daughters, but I see, you know, the girls in my son's school and many of them show up in little princess dresses these days. I mean, it's almost, it's nobody bats an eyelid anymore if you see a little girl dressed up as a princess wearing glittery shoes, but even regular clothing seems to have been infused by the virus of princessness with like everything being pink and glittery and flowery and curly cues and you know, pink or variations of pink and purple. Is this something that is so widespread now that we don't necessarily notice it unless we're really looking for it?
I think that's a great way to put it. You know, I interviewed dozens of parents for my book in addition to going undercover. And the consensus was that even among the parents who thought Oh, yeah, princess stuff is overwhelming, and I'm going to hold off on that for my daughter. It is so ubiquitous as to be unavoidable. It's everywhere. It's not just the clothing and the toys. If you go to the grocery store, there are all kinds of grocery items from SpaghettiOs to grapes that are packaged with pictures of the Disney princesses on them. Even at the hardware store, there are Disney princess seeds in the garden center and
Oh.
Disney princess bedroom paints. It's literally in every product category. It's unbelievably successful, but therefore unavoidable. For little girls growing up in America today, it is like the air that they breathe. It's everywhere.
Okay, so what's wrong with this? I can, imagine some parents who haven't thought about this as a problem saying, "So what? So what if our daughters go through this princess phase? They'll grow out of it. Or if they
You know,
don't, so what?"
it's true. Girls will grow out of it. What is concerning to a lot of experts and, critics, including myself, is that princess culture does set girls on a pathway in which they become accustomed to receiving positive feedback about their appearance and thinking that how they look is most important. Think about it. When a little girl goes to the grocery store dressed in a princess dress that should be a Halloween costume, but she's wearing it year-round because she loves princesses so much. People stop and they comment and they say, "Oh, aren't you a pretty little princess? Aren't you so beautiful?" It becomes a feedback loop where they get hooked on that external validation. And as they get older, if their parents haven't taken a few different steps to just sort of mitigate the effects, it really can become exacerbated as they're heading into adolescence. And the last thing you want is an adolescent daughter who's hooked on getting any kind of feedback possible for the way that she looks.
And we will talk in a few minutes about the kind of mitigation that parents can do. So there's the obvious gender issue, but what about the racial issue? Princesses on our screens are rarely non-white.
You know, Disney for a long time had a series of white princess after white princess after white princess. And finally, when they created the Disney princess brand, they looked back at all the princesses they'd had up to that point, and I think they realized that it was just Jasmine who was not white from the film Aladdin and Pocahontas. What they did at that point is to make the line look a little more diverse than it was, they sort of tokenized Mulan, who is not a princess and does not marry a prince, and made her part of the Disney princess line. And then a few years ago, they created The Princess and the Frog, where they had Tiana, who's the first African American princess. One of the challenges, however, with having sort of a bunch of white princesses and then one each of these different races or ethnicities is there's a burden of representation placed upon the one princess in that category. If you think about it, little white girls can look up to a whole range of white princesses who have a range of behaviors and appearances and values and beliefs. But if a little black girl is looking up to the first African American princess, Tiana, one thing I've heard from a lot of parents is, she can't be all things to all people. And obviously, not every family of color, not every family that's black is the same. And so there's disagreement within various communities of different races and ethnicities as to what's good and bad about those representations. So some parents say, "Yes, Tiana, finally." Others say, "Hey, why is she cooking and cleaning the whole movie? Or why is she a frog for two-thirds of the film? This is not what we want our daughters to see." So it's so complicated.
And of course, the other aspect is the body issues that are raised among girls, not just their clothing and their outward appearance, facial appearance, but their body issues with the unbelievably unrealistic waist sizes, waistline sizes of these Disney princesses. So we can say, all right, in the cartoons, they exaggerate. Eyes are, the size of the eyes is half the face, so the size of the waistline is about the same size as someone's arm. But we have this new live-action feature film that I mentioned, Cinderella, coming out this Friday, where they have artificially reduced the waist size of the actress playing the part of Cinderella, literally by forcing her into a corset, which, was something that women would be forced into in the past century. Somehow Disney didn't think that it was inappropriate to do this to this actress and then to present this body to girls.
I was really
She couldn't even
shocked
eat
when,
solid foods. Oh.
yes, I saw the interviews with her and I was shocked. And then I thought maybe I shouldn't have been shocked because this is just Disney. They're trying to make this woman who is already of a remarkably small body type. Right? She's on the very small side, even smaller, so that she is as cartoonish as possible, and yet it's a live-action film. Now, I know that some of it is also an optical illusion, right? The poofiness of the skirt. The skirt is so full that it makes the waist look even tinier. But frankly, if they're already getting that with an optical illusion, why cinch her waist so tight that she could only be on a liquid diet while she was filming? That just is more extreme than is necessary. Mm-hmm. Disney is aware that parents and critics have these concerns, and the responsible thing, honestly, would have been to say, you know what, let's let her natural waist, which is already plenty small, be evident in these scenes.
Right. Well, Rebecca, what are the ill effects on boys of princess culture? On the one hand, I imagine it teaches boys to judge girls based on their appearance as well, and see them as these passive creatures obsessed with their looks. And on the other hand, there's also this sense that it can be taboo for boys who might want to experience or experiment in so-called girly things for fear of appearing too effeminate. You know, God forbid a boy might wear a tutu or a pink shirt, for that matter. I mean, even a pink shirt these days is a girl's outfit.
Oh, I had one parent tell me about little boys who wouldn't drink out of pink straws from the set of straws because the pink was a girl color.
Yeah, my son wouldn't wear purple shoes. I mean,
oh. Yeah, I mean, what's happening is girls' culture, girls' interests are being marginalized and constricted into what I call monochromatic girlhood. If it's pink, it's for girls. And if it's not, it's for everybody else, meaning for boys. And what happens is they're dividing and conquering our children in the marketplace so that parents who have children of both sexes feel compelled to buy twice as many toys because things that were once gender neutral, like the radio wagon and the Mega Bloks and the stacking rings by Fisher-Price, they're all available now in pink versions and the regular versions, but clearly the regular versions are targeting boys. I actually published an article in the Boston Globe magazine last week about this, just charting how significant a change it is that currently we actually, as a culture, have gender segregated our children, in large part thanks to the rise of princess culture, more significantly than they were segregated in the 1950s when gender stereotypes were socially acceptable.
Wow. Well, Rebecca, let's talk about the backlash from parents of daughters. And in pop culture, particularly online these days, seems to be pushing back, making fun of princess culture. I'm thinking of the wonderful staged photographs a few years ago of the real lives of Disney princesses that an artist created and put online. Someone else also took stills from Disney movies and thickened the waistlines of the princesses to more realistic sizes. Can you tell us about some of this backlash?
Yes, I think that the backlash we're seeing in social media in particular, like those thickened princesses, and I think the line you're talking about of photographs was fallen princesses,
right,
which I thought was so brilliant, and all kinds of memes that are out there, really are tapping into a groundswell of cultural concern where we're kind of at a tipping point nowadays. People are tired of all things princess being given to girls as really their only choice. And now we're seeing new companies that are independent rise up, like Princess Free Zone and Princess Awesome, that are creating shirts or dresses that break gender stereotypes for girls. And at the same time, we're seeing companies like Quirky Kids and Jack and Jill Kids that are creating unisex things for boys and girls, in some cases, making pink items for boys to try to break down these gender stereotypes, very much like when President Obama was doing the Toys for Tots event and he was sorting the toys into girls and boys piles and people were questioning his, you know, placing baseball sets into the girls bin. And he literally said, I'm just trying to break down these gender stereotypes.
And he's the father of two daughters, so he gets it. You know, there's also Goldie Blocks, which has enjoyed enormous success.
Oh, yes. They're another Kickstarter brand.
Rebecca? We're going to have to call Rebecca back. Her video stream has frozen, so do bear with us. And we are discussing her book, the book by my guest Rebecca Haynes, who is a media studies professor at Salem State University. Her book is called The Princess Problem, Guiding Our Girls Through the Princess-Obsessed Years. And this is part of our ongoing series on the politics of parenting, which, by the way, you can find all of our other episodes in this series on our website at uprisingwithsonali.com. And we have a number of issues that we've tackled in this series over the last few years. And again, we're speaking with Rebecca Haynes, who we're trying to bring back onto a video stream with us. In a few minutes, if you stay tuned, we will talk about how you as parents can combat princess culture. Rebecca, are you back with us?
I'm back.
Yes,
thank you.
Goldilocks, you were about to mention.
Yes, so one of the things that's terrific about Goldilocks is it was another independent Kickstarter brand in which a woman just said, you know what, if the mainstream building toys like Legos aren't really going to welcome girls into their major lines and continue to market themselves as boys' toys, we're going to give girls something that is just as good, where they can create and be inventive and feel good about the fact that they're girls and have it celebrated. Other independent companies have launched as well. Like, there's a doll line called Lottie that the doll is modeled after the average proportions of a 9-year-old girl, so you don't get the body image issues that you get with these more mature doll figures. And there's a Snow Queen Lottie, there's a new Astronomer Lottie, there's all kinds of Lottie dolls with a range of interests, but never a princess, which is really interesting that there is this much backlash that people are saying, you know, we're just not doing princess anymore.
It's been overdone, clearly. Well, Rebecca, what can parents of daughters do, and actually just parents in general do, when their children are sort of influenced overly by this princess culture? It's everywhere. I mean, you can certainly put your kids on a media diet by just saying, we're not going to watch these princess stories anymore, but you run the risk of your child hating you.
Yeah, and that doesn't work. They'll see it somewhere else.
Exactly. And you know, it's really tough for parents of daughters to shop for clothes that aren't pink or purple. How do we combat princess culture?
Well, I think that one of the most important things any parent can do is to watch and discuss media with their children. And this goes for parents of boys and girls. If we as parents can sit down with our children as they are watching television and basically be their what I call pop culture coaches, just coaching them through this pop culture environment that has good stuff and bad, we can point out to them, oh, I really like the part where she does X, Y, and Z, and reinforce our values for our children. But we can also say, oh, you know, I don't know about that part. I think that, you know, when the witch talks about Rapunzel getting chubby, that you shouldn't talk to girls that way. That's just not appropriate. And you can really point things out in concrete ways. And, you know, little kids, they're good. They're parent-oriented. They want to listen. And it's the time to get to them when they're preschool, early elementary school, and are still parent-oriented. And they'll accept our values and they'll be instilled in them throughout life.
So what you're saying is that rather than try to control everything our children watch, teach them to be mini media critics and yes, teach them media literacy skills.
Indeed. I think that if there's something you are really concerned about that might be really bad for your child, you have every right as a parent to say, you know what, I'm going to say that this is crossing a line and this is not appropriate. And teaching kids what's age appropriate and what your concerns are helps them take no for an answer. Mm-hmm. But in general, if there's something that you know they're going to see anyway, like a Disney princess movie, you know, or other media texts, or you can do this in the toy store as well. You can look at the packages as you're walking down the aisle. Just letting kids watch TV and sit alongside them isn't enough. We have to talk back and make sure that they understand where we're coming from. The same is true with children's books. Studies have shown that when parents read their children books about things like racial diversity, if the parents don't actually, for white parents in particular, if the white parents don't take a moment to say, you know, I'm really glad this book has children with different skin tones because I think that's really important, kids might not understand that parents are actually endorsing that positive content. So the talking with our kids is crucial.
And so finally, do you think that Disney, which isn't the only sort of perpetrator of princess culture, but certainly is the main and most lucrative money-making venture in the United States, is it taking note that there's this massive parental backlash of parents who want to see their children, their daughters grow up as empowered women who don't give in to princess, who want to shun princess culture? Are they, do you think, slowly rethinking this entire approach to marketing?
Well,
or is that too optimistic?
You know, in the movies, in the content of the storylines of the film, you can see that the princesses themselves are behaving in more empowered and self-directed ways. But Walt Disney Studios is separate from Disney's consumer product division. And I think the biggest problem right now is actually with consumer products, because when they try to make princess products, they're never bringing out of the movie the empowered and interesting parts of the girls. You know, there's no Belle's library set. There's no Mulan in her armor, in her warrior gear. There's only the pretty, pretty version. They're reducing them all back to the mean of the earliest princesses like Snow White, Cinderella, Sleeping Beauty, that were really meek and passive and pretty. So I think that if Disney as a corporation could get Consumer Products Division on the same page as Walt Disney Studios, which has made progress with great characters like Merida and the sisters in Frozen are a big improvement in behavior over previous princesses.
They still have teeny tiny waists, of course.
The visual side of it is horrible. The visual side, I think, is only getting worse. I think it's getting more exaggerated. And that feeds into what's happening in the toys, because when you buy your child a toy that's modeled after one of these characters, it has all those exaggerated markings and none of the behaviors. Toys don't have behaviors embedded in them. So it's really a conundrum. I hope they'll get their act together. Parents really want to change.
And so, of course, these companies usually respond where it hurts them, which is in the wallet. Rebecca, yes. I want to thank you very much for joining us today. Certainly your book can be a great guidebook for parents of daughters. Thanks so much and best of luck to you.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
My guest, Rebecca Haynes, is a media studies professor at Salem State University, and she is the author of The Princess Problem, Guiding Our Girls Through the Princess-Obsessed Years. This is part of our ongoing series on the politics of parenting.